America has been an individualistic nation pretty much since its founding. Personal identity is enshrined in our Constitution and Bill of Rights, part of what it means to be American. But social critic Alyssa Quart has come to think that the American ideal of the self-reliant, self-made, rugged individual is in fact a lie. In her book, Bootstrapped, she argues that even the people we associate most with the gospel of self-reliance didn't live up to it themselves. If you go back to Little House on the Prairie writer Laura Ingalls Wilder, or to the transcendentalist icons Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau, Alyssa says they're not who we think. Shannon Henry Kleiber wanted to know more.
I really like how you trace this through history, this idea of individualism. And let's go back to Emerson and Thoreau and your trip to Walden Pond. When you imagine transcendentalism, it sounds pretty good, right? I mean, simple living, nature, spirituality, it sounds like a good life. But even that wasn't quite true, the story of Emerson and Thoreau. And tell us a little bit about why that is, you know, why Walden was not quite the way we might imagine it in The Gloriousness, and why does that matter?
To me, it was really important when I started looking into Emerson and Thoreau's biographies, because Emerson came from relative wealth. He depended on the fortune of his first wife, Ellen, for much of the funding that allowed him to work on his Life of the Mind. So after she passed away, he was able to support his family and on occasion his friends after suing her people for his share of her large estate. And yeah, there's no shame in that. But the idea of self-reliance and some of the language that he came up with to describe how people, individuals need to hoist themselves on their own petard, etc., he was not quite doing right. And neither was Thoreau, who was dependent on Emerson and also dependent on a whole social circle. So one of the things that was kind of amusing about reading Walden again is you thinking, actually, the guy was hanging out with his friends constantly. And he had like this. I read all this stuff during COVID when we were actually isolated. And I was thinking, no way. Like
he had a community.
He had totally had a community, and it was kind of a riotous one. And you know, there's a famous thing that his mother, you know, helped him out. His mother was doing his cleaning for him, and he saw Emerson all the time, and he was in constant exchange. Both Emerson and he, that's part of the transcendentalists, that's their circle, was that they were in constant contact with each other, and they put out famous magazine, The Dial, and it's the opposite of this isolated existence.
Alyssa, you take aim at Laura Ingalls Wilder and the rugged individualism of her books and the show that followed, the self-made pioneer, the iconic self-made pioneer. What problems do you have with that?
Well, part of the problem was her family were beneficiaries of the Homestead Act, which was an 1862 huge land giveaway. And this idea that they were doing this all on their own is truly false. And the number of adult descendants of the original Homestead Act recipients has been estimated to be 46 million Americans, and they have gone on to benefit from this giveaway, and they're almost entirely white. They were able to, often to get this land through the dislocation of indigenous people. So this idea that this text was all about like plucky Laura, Pa, who's this great, you know, farmer, all doing it themselves, moving to the West, it rested on a lie. And I think we need to look at that lie, because otherwise we'll believe the propaganda. And the reason that I say it's propaganda is it was. I mean, Laura Ingalls Wilder published 8 books between 1932 and 1943. She's sold 60 million copies roughly. And that period was the Depression. She was a conservative leaning person. Her daughter was a rabid libertarian, Rose. And it was aimed at FDR and the New Deal. These books were a critique of whatever they call it, handouts. And they were Hooverian. They were in praise of Herbert Hoover, who promulgated the term rugged individualism. So they had a political function. So I think we need to focus on that, especially when we have our 7, 8, and 9-year-olds reading it still, to recognize that they're getting this ideology fed to them.
I loved Laura Ingalls Wilder growing up. We're similar age, we're Gen X, and it was part of my memories of childhood. But then when I had daughters, and you have a daughter, I started to read the Little House books to my daughters, and I found myself skipping passages when you were growing up, were you like me, where you thought it was wonderful and then it took parenthood for you to change your view on it?
Oh my God, completely, Shannon. I had this, you know, romantic view of it. Yeah, when I was reading to her the books in which she was reading them herself when she was like 6 or 7 or 8, and they had slurs against Indigenous people. They were clearly propagandistic. And I watched the show with my daughter and I was like, how do I let her enjoy this yet tell her that these messages are kind of false? And so by the end of that chapter, actually, she had gotten the memo. I mean, the things I loved when I was looking into the, again, with the biography, was that Pa was a terrible farmer. And when I found that out, I was like, oh my gosh, I love this, because he got every benefit, Homestead Act, got land, but his neighbors were helping him farm.
When we look at rugged individualism, why would you say that's not a good thing for Americans?
If it was in a vacuum and we were told to pray to the God of rugged individualism, I'd say fine. But the problem is it's sort of incentivized voters to believe in the self-made man myth. And the latest result of that was in part the election of Donald Trump, who voters believed was a self-made man, which is very interesting. Obviously, he wasn't. It's allowed for social programs to be gutted, for people to have difficulty accessing everything from Medicaid to SNAP. So that story is part of the thing that permits lawmakers to do these things, because they know that the voters have been inculcated in this.
And it's in our human nature, right? And in biology, to be social creatures who rely on each other, right? And yeah. What happens if we don't do that?
I mean, during the pandemic, there was a split around that, right? Because we were both incredibly dependent in new ways. There was a rise of mutual aid. There was a rise of other kinds of care vehicles within communities. But at the same time, there was a ton of isolation. And if you look at the depression and anxiety levels, that's like a huge sample group of what happens when we're not interrelating.
You quote the poet Adrienne Rich in your book, and I know she didn't mean it for that time, but it struck me as that time. You say, in those years, people will say, we lost track of the meaning of we, of you. We found ourselves reduced to I. And it really struck me as caregiving, mental health. Is that how you meant that to resonate?
Oh, completely. I read this poem over and over again during the pandemic because I felt like that's what was happening. We were being reduced to I, and I wanted to, just personally, I wanted to be close to the we. If I had a religion, it would be the religion of this kind of care and willingness to be visibly dependent oneself and to respond to other people's dependence and not to shame them or blame them for it, not to stigmatize it as codependence. I think that would be an article of faith for me.
That's Alyssa Quart, the author of Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream, talking with Shannon Henry Kleiber.